Hello and welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. My name's Chris Fletcher and I'm your host. Tech on Toast exists to connect hospitality to technology. Search for your best problem-solving tech on our marketplace, listen to both operators and tech experts on our podcast, or just meet up with the brilliant people who are helping innovate the hospitality industry as we enter a new era. Welcome to Tech on Toast. The Tech on Toast podcast is brought today by Point One. Point One offers the complete EPOS system for your hospitality business. From mobile order and pay and self-serve kiosks to restaurant and kitchen management, Point One has the solution. Head over to their website today to find out more and get in touch with their experienced team. Enjoy the show. Welcome all to the Tech on Toast podcast. And this week, I'm very happy to introduce David Hume, UK and LATAM Director at Marketman. David, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, and I was just talking before we started about about your title. Because yeah. I was reading, I'm just checking UK and LATAM. So explain your region, because I used to moan in my operational role of having London and Birmingham as my patch, moaning that was far apart. Yours is a little bit different.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I started out just having the UK.
Right.
And then we started getting dribs and drabs of Latin America business coming through, and as it happens, I'm probably on the sales side of things. I'm probably the only person that speaks Spanish.
Wow.
So rather than diving right in and, you know, making mistakes like a lot of businesses do in hiring for a market, we decided that we tested out. And
that seems like a sensible approach.
Yeah, well, get this, during COVID, when everything was a bit slow in the UK, well, Mexico, Latin America was still open. So yeah. Marco Mann asked me if I would go out there and really kind of kick things off. So my family and I lived in Mexico during the lockdown.
I did not think that was going there. Wow.
Yeah. So
how was that?
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah.
Have you got kids?
I've got one, a 5-year-old. Yeah. He wasn't in school.
What an experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even if he was in school, I would have taken him out.
Totally.
Gone.
Totally. Yeah. It was just an incredible place to be. Everything was still open. I think part of it was just, you know, let's ignore the fact that COVID actually exists.
Yes.
But also it's very much, you know, where we were, especially we weren't in Mexico City, we were down on the coast. So everything was open.
Yeah, so, I think a lot of people listening to you now are going, yeah, I think I might get a job at Market and pray for another pandemic.
They should. Have a check out on LinkedIn. We've got some open positions.
And you're not originally from Mexico or LATAM. Where are you from?
I'm from Newcastle originally, yeah.
There we go.
As you can probably tell.
You hear it, only hear it when you say Newcastle.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the way you guys say it is that Newcastle. I'm from Liverpool and we have a way of saying the pool, and the same as you guys. Yeah. But it's brilliant. Tell me a little bit about Marketman anyway, because obviously a lot of people know who you are, but give us a little bit, your best pitch, I suppose, for Marketman.
Best pitch for Marketman? Well, Marketman's a dedicated back of house system, essentially. We concentrate, we stick in our lane.
Yeah.
So we never really blur the lines with point of sale systems, accounting systems, etc. And, you know, we concentrate on inventory management, procurement, menu recipe management, and reporting, data analytics, etc. So, you know, I would say we're the beating heart of the hospitality business. And we help people essentially operate as profitably as possible, really, because everything that we give them, the tools, et cetera, we give them that insight to understand, you know, where they're making money, where they're not making money, how they can improve.
I'm fascinated with automating back of house,
yeah.
Because I think that it's the one area, I suppose, and I've spent my life in the industry, and as everyone knows, I bore everyone on this podcast talking about it, but It is the heartbeat. I mean, a lot of us refer to that in our lives when we work in the kitchens and work around the kitchens. They are the heartbeat of the restaurant and the industry. And did you find that we're further away? So the front house have got online ordering, they've got delivery, they've got great flashy light EPOS, heavy EPOS, whatever you want to call it, reservations. Do you feel like the back of house has got a journey to go on still, or as in the amount of customers that are bringing it on, or do you think that they're already down that path, or is it a real mixed bag?
I think actually the challenges that we've been facing since COVID and now inflation and, you know, cost of living
yes,
and labor shortages, yeah. Et cetera, let's not forget Brexit. We've seen actually an uptick in customers flocking towards technology,
yeah.
Looking to be able to embrace certainly automated ecosystems, I guess,
yeah.
To fill the gaps of, you know, the operational processes because they don't have enough staff, et cetera. And then now with the volatile pricing of goods, cost of goods, they really need to have a handle on it. And we saw, you know, the COVID was challenging for everybody and certainly for us as well. You know, we supported our existing customers as much as we could. We stopped subscription fees, et cetera, which obviously had a big impact on our business.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to say that was actually very short-lived, you know, probably 2 months into COVID. And we saw a huge influx of inbound requests for the technology. And I think people were able really to take stock in what they were doing.
Yeah, it was like a restart, wasn't it, for a lot of people? I mean, and kitchen teams especially, I think you're just in it, aren't you? You're rolling totally. With it, totally. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you get that hard stop like everybody had, it's that opportunity to look.
Yeah, and they really took stock and started thinking, actually, are we doing the right things? And, you know, nobody knew at the time either how long this was going to go on for. And then they started looking at technology in order to be able to make sure that when they came out of this, they came out of it stronger. And actually, MarketMan in general, we came out of it more on demand than ever. And it hasn't really slowed down, to be honest. And I think it's probably due to all of the difficulties that hospitality are facing, that they're looking towards solutions like MarketMan. And I think you're right. I think there's still a way to go with back of house. You know, we never stop listening to customers. We never stop like looking to release features that are going to make their jobs a bit easier or actually give them more insight into how to, you know, manage their stock or manage their margins more effectively. Yeah. And especially now, because if they don't do that, nothing else matters.
Yeah, someone was talking to me today about 1% margin profit they run in a restaurant. And I was just like, wow. So almost break even, right? You know, and to the point, and we know in big chains, there's loss leaders, there's people, you know, there's sites in enterprise businesses that don't make any money, but then there's sites that make lots of money. So they kind of balance each other out. So you understand it. But we talk about labor costs so much and people cost and the cost of having people in the business, losing people in the business and food cost. Almost for me, when I was an operator, the labor cost and food cost were my two main management parts, right? I had to focus on them. And I feel like food cost is I know it's not forgotten in the industry, but from where I sit and where we work, it's almost like it's a secondary thing. And I think it's one of the biggest, especially as you just mentioned, with the inflation and the prices going up, it's insane. So I think tech should play a part in helping fix that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now, certainly in the UK, we're seeing this across the globe. We operate in 57 different countries now, so we get a good overview of what's happening in the world, and largely across all of those geographic locations, they're facing the same three issues, labor shortages, inflation, and then the volatile cost of goods. But then you look at Europe and certainly the UK as well, we've been impacted by the war in Ukraine, which has then had a knock-on effect with increased fuel prices, which then again increases the cost of goods. But then the UK has got its all special set of circumstances, hasn't it?
We are special, aren't we?
And then you throw in lovely Brexit and you can't get the goods.
Yeah.
And when you can, they're extortionate. I was having a chat with Pokey House yesterday, and they were talking about the inflation price in salmon, for instance, which goes into a lot of their poke bowls and things, and it almost tripled in price.
And when you're a single product, I worked for Pie Minister for a while, I was on the board there, and obviously they're a pie business. Mm-hmm. And when you're a single product business, and they have other products, but your major product is a single product, pastry, butter, whatever. When you get hit by those inflation costs, it is, I've seen it, and this is before Brexit and the pandemic, this is just normal. This was a butter price increase of 200% for some reason 4 years ago. But seeing our amazing op structure in the factory having to manage and buying 2 years in advance, going out to Colombia, looking at different ideas to kind of counteract what the butter prices were. It was insane. So you can really, you can't imagine how tough this might be for business like Pokey or Marigami, all these guys who have a kind of a single product business. It becomes challenging.
Yeah, and I think with Pokey in particular, they're largely European based. They're Italian headquartered. So in Europe, they were able to react quite quickly, and they've got a much better kind of supply chain. But then they've obviously got a lot of locations here in the UK as well. Yeah. But that supply chain can't filter through to the UK because of Brexit.
Such an own goal. Let's another podcast.
Let's not get into politics on the show.
Yeah. No. It's a huge issue. And do you find, how quickly do the material effects of you working with people around food cost and procurement, for instance, how quickly can you see those material effects coming through in terms of the benefit?
Yeah, very quickly. Once you're set up, you start noticing pretty much immediately within a week or two when you're receiving those cost of goods, because it still surprises me, even right now, how many businesses and large multi-site businesses that have no technology for back of house, they're still working on spreadsheets. And what that doesn't give them is it doesn't give them the visibility to those fluctuations in prices. Yeah. They only find that out when they actually sit down and they analyze the data themselves, which typically, because you're running a business, you're in the thick of it, might happen at the end of the month, and then they realize actually their margins have been impacted significantly. But one of the features that we've built into the system, and actually we've had it a long time, well before all of these issues came about, but it just seems to be one of the most used and desired features right now, is the ability to be able to set kind of target food costs on everything that you sell.
Oh, so on, not just on the site, but on actual dishes?
Correct, yeah. Dish, drink level, etc. You can put an individual target food cost on all of those. And then because the systems are kind of an integrated back of house system, if you like, with procurement and everything, when you're receiving the goods in, if at that point the ingredient price has fluctuated, it filters all the way through the system and then will flag proactive alerts to people to say, you know, this dish, or this drink, wow, et cetera, is no longer where your target food cost needs to be.
Price up or manage the product out.
Yeah, they can then make those, you know, kind of proactive rather than reactive decisions.
And I think that's what I always want to look for when I do these chats, that, you know, it's great to have nice shiny tech. Everyone loves a bit of tech. Apple came along and changed our lives. But I think having that benefit straight away, so straight away being able to know that I've got this dish, it was at 40% margin 2 weeks ago, it's now at 60. I need to deal with it. I need to put it on special, I need to get rid of it, I need to do whatever, you know, but it enables me to pull a lever.
Totally.
And I think an operator, that's what you want. And I'm guessing the adoption of your tech, because I think adoption is quite hard front of house sometimes with tech, and I think it becomes, there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things to make sure we're using. But is it different in the kitchen? Do you find that people, because it's an, like, stock taking has to happen, right?
Totally. Yeah. And, I mean, let's face it, it's probably one of the most hated jobs.
Yes, I still hate it.
Nobody likes it.
Scarred from it. Yeah.
And really, inventory is where we started the journey with MarketMan. You know, that was kind of we weren't a procurement system, we were an inventory system.
Yeah.
And then everything else we've developed over the time. So we've had a good head start at this. And the adoption from the inventory counting side of things we see is pretty high, simply because it makes what is a very long, protracted job much quicker. So, for instance, you know, you can download the MarketMan app onto a phone or a tablet.
Very cool.
On any kind of Android or iOS. Yeah. And what that allows you to do is you can have multiple people counting inventory simultaneously. So it's not just left to one person or a manager or a chef that's going to do everything.
And I'll tell you now, that was the biggest thing ever. Like, so when I was counting back in the day, it was always, you cannot let Chris count on his own. Not because, one, I was stupid, but because two, I make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
I miss things because I'm getting called out the
You're
fridge
human.
To do something. Yeah, I'm human. That's exactly that. So having multiple people having your back, as it would be in terms of stock taking, is vital.
Yeah, because we allow people to essentially split down the business into what we call storage areas, which are kind of customizable.
Yeah.
Call them whatever makes sense to the business. And then they can even have the same stock item in multiple storage areas. So like I say, you've got a particular wine in the cellar that's in the bar, that's in the restaurant, or you maybe even cook with it in the kitchen. And then you can have somebody in each one of those storage areas on a mobile device, just counting that small stock area, which allows them to be able to focus a lot more instead of thinking, I've got to get through this before I go home tonight. And it just makes the whole process a lot easier, which actually means it gets done.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's viewing looking at the dry store, freezer, kitchen, bar stock, cellar to count, and you're a one guy or one girl sitting there going that night going, wow.
I just want to go home.
Well, you know already you're going to fail on that stock count because you know you're going to make mistakes. You're going to rush something. You're not in tune. But looking, it's like everything. You break things down into bite-sized chunks.
Exactly.
It becomes a lot easier to consume. I love it. And you mentioned actually at the start, you're in Mexico. I'm very jealous. But are the challenges the same? I ask everyone this who's had the ability to travel with tech.
Yeah.
Is it the same kind of situations you see across the world in terms of, you know, managing back of house automation, or is it slightly different? Other nuances?
I think the only nuances really are where it comes into kind of different regulations within certain countries. But largely, everybody's faced with the same, you know, inaccurate procurement processes or inaccurate crack counts and not having visibility to the data to be able to really understand where the business is at. So largely across those, I think, 57 countries now, they're all the same. They're all the same problems. And that's where I think it's been, I'm not going to say easy because it hasn't, but it's been possible for us to grow that significantly globally because we focus on those three areas and make those as, you know, good as what we possibly can within the system.
And I find it quite interesting that you guys are staying in your lane, as you put it at the start, because I think a lot of the tech guys have, the temptation to go and build other things because you can, because you've got smart people, smart developers, or, you know, and some of the competitors may be doing it. Is the temptation for you guys, or are you very much focused on delivering that one? Yeah. Well, not that one product, but the back of house fix.
It's always been like, Noam, the founder, he's been very single-mindedly focused on what the problem was that we were solving, right, essentially. And we've never really wavered. You know, we don't do any kind of custom development for people. The only development that we ever launch is if it's going to benefit the vast majority of customers using the platform anyway. And like I said, because most people are facing the same kind of issues, then largely if we're going to do a new release, then it is going to benefit most people. You know, for instance, we've been working for some time now on a new machine learning algorithm, which is going to help with suggested ordering.
Wow.
We actually started right before the pandemic, but then the pandemic hits and, you know, historical data delayed. Meant nothing. I think we're probably going to release that next quarter, I believe. So that's something that we've been
listening to. How does that work then? How does that... In real terms.
Yeah, so what it does is it looks at historical data based upon usage, sales. You can program in kind of forecasted sales for a week, etc. Then it looks at lots of different data sets and spits out what you should be ordering to be able to run your business. And then over time, it learns. So maybe you can put in a forecast of, you know, X, Y, and Z for these items.
Yeah.
And then what comes through afterwards is actually what you sold that week.
Yeah.
And then it starts learning. And then as time goes on, actually the algorithm itself.
Like par levels? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all run off like par levels, exactly.
I can tell you some horrible stories about Excel sheets and par levels. My God. we had some brilliant, I was at Carluccio's for like 7 years, and we had some brilliant people in our accounting team. And a guy called Jason Myers was a wizard, literally, building Excel sheets and databases and all this, before we had the tech to do it. And we had a par level accounting system. No one knew how it worked. No. Apart from Jason, nobody had it. So if it broke, we had no clue how to fix it. But it just shows how long it's been going on for, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you guys are still only just looking.
Correct.
At, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've been working off...
the money, it's just crazy.
Yeah. You know, kind of static par levels, et cetera, for a while. And yeah, I think as time's gone on, we've listened. We know that actually we can do something with it. And we've not rushed into it.
Yeah.
And this is something that we never really do. You know, we try and release features in a timely manner, but... We always want to make sure that we get it right. So we've been testing this with some customers here in the UK, in Australia, and in the US to make sure that actually we've got it as close as possible to working immediately, rather than releasing it half-baked and then having issues, etc. But like I said, it's machine learning, so you're never going to get instant results. It still needs to learn and adapt over time.
Like forecasting. I was talking to Tenzo a few weeks ago, and Christian was saying about, you know, the fact that, you know, whilst you want to, if you open a new site, whilst you want to plug in straight away and get that data, you've got some historical data from like sites or something like that, but you need time to kind of bed it in. And when I was stock taking, there were so many moving parts. And as an area manager, actually, and I think a lot of guys who I talk to listen to this, who are multi-site managers, always talk about there's so many moving parts to stock taking and results, which you're then held accountable for, right? So as an area manager, I'd sit there with my sheet, with all my 42 sites on, I'd talk about my food costing. And obviously, I had no clue. I had some bearing on the really bad results. I'd done some investigation. Yeah. On the rest of it, I was just like, yeah, that's what they put. That's what it is. My boss is probably listening to me, liar. But how accurate are they becoming? I mean, are you really seeing that, this real consistency? Are they getting really close to accurate results each week? And can you, I suppose, because it gives the business so much confidence, I would think.
Yeah, and the way that we've operated stock counts is on a blind basis. Yeah. So people can go in and fill in the stock count.
Yeah.
But without them actually knowing what should be there in the first place.
Right,
and
cool.
What we find is that that's giving a far greater level of accuracy because...
Yeah.
Nobody's getting lazy or thinking, oh, I really need to balance go home. Let's just. I think that's what should be.
I never did that. I'm just saying that you could do that.
And it's only really when you start accessing the reporting where you start seeing your actual versus theoreticals.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're seeing the accuracy is becoming far better. You know, most of the time it takes a little bit of training with the staff, etc., and making sure that line checks are done correctly.
Yeah.
But again, that was some work that we did probably about. Probably about 12 months ago now, we had an actual versus theoretical report, but then we added in the actual versus theoretical GPs as well, so you get far clearer visibility of even where you're missing.
Yeah. Actual theoretical puts fear through me. It just reminds me of the old days. But no, I it's good to see, isn't it? I mean, it must be, I suppose, very quickly great to see for your customers that you're actually getting this accuracy quite quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we never really talk about MarketMan from a tangible benefit of time saving, although it saves a chunk of time.
Yeah.
We only ever really kind of put ourselves up and say, look at the tangible results that you're going to receive on your margin, your cost of goods, because that's where you're going to be able to see the figures pretty much instantly, especially if you've not been really using a stock system before.
Yeah.
You know, then the results are very evident very quickly.
And what about the data? So obviously you mentioned data, and there's quite a lot of data that flows through your system, I'm sure. Is it easy to share up and share down? Because obviously you've got the site manager who wants to share with his chefs or with his front of house team, and then you've got the area manager who wants to share above probably to their boss. And then is that something you guys can accommodate? Is that how you work that?
Yeah, we've got different kind of hierarchy levels, if you like. If you look from the top, for a multi-site business, there's something that we call an HQ, which really is an administrative control panel, if you like, where you can control suppliers, recipes from one, but it makes the system very scalable for multi-site operations as well. But then all of the data feeds back into that HQ. So as a overview, you can see across the whole estate exactly what's going on, which branches are performing, however. But then when you get down to site level as well, then there's kind of user permissions for managers and then user permissions for users. And then I suppose the lowest permission level that we've got is just accessing the app only. And the app that we've built is designed so that it allows you to carry out only certain but important daily functions from that device. So actually, if you've got general staff members that only need to do procurement or inventory counting, et cetera, they don't really need access to the desktop at all.
So could you have a product, so maybe you had a product with bread last week and you want to count bread. I think we used to do this. We used to then put bread on a daily count.
Yeah.
Is that something you would do?
Exactly.
Yeah. So you can do that on the app.
Yeah. We call them kind of line checks or daily counts. Yeah.
Yeah. The daily count. Again, I'm getting tremors. But it was a really great way of actually working out what that product was doing, right? To work out where it had gone or where it was going.
Yeah. Especially for high value items. You know, we find that like
bread wasn't probably the best example.
Like steak restaurants or lobster or, you know, especially wine.
Yeah.
You know, we deal with a lot of like Michelin starred restaurants, et cetera, and they actually focus on kind of the high-end wines that they count on a more regular basis because one bottle goes missing and actually your margins are shot.
Yeah, coffee was another one that was a really... So people used to use it to inflate and deflate stock in a really poor way. But anyway, and what about the chef's feedback? What's the feedback like from the people that you... Not just the chefs, but the people that are working with you in terms of the, I suppose, the speed of impact of your product and also the benefits they're getting?
It's interesting, actually, because I think it depends on the role within the restaurant and the feedback that we get. You know, I mean, any chefs that are listening, you know, most chefs are quite resistant to new technology unless they've used technology before because, let's face it, they've got a very busy, you know, high-stress job introducing tech where they've not really used it before. It takes some winning them over. Where we get the feedback from really is from kind of the management level.
Yeah.
But actually, in saying that, what we've found, and I'm going to specifically talk about the UK market now, is that we've actually had people writing MarketMan on the CVs when they're applying for another job.
That's great.
That we've got MarketMan experience. And we've received this about two or three
times. You're turning into
previously.
A verb. I was talking to Amber like this about this. If you can turn into a verb and you become a thing, it's that you've made it, right?
It's incredible. Yeah. And what we're finding is that actually people have had such a good kind of user experience with MarketMan. And when they're moving roles or moving companies, we're getting a lot of kind of referral business from the staff. So owners are calling us saying, well, I've just, a new chef's just joined us. And they said that they used MarketMan previously. What is it? So then you go through it and it's, we obviously take that as a very big compliment of what the product can do and how easy it is for people to use really. Yeah.
And how long have you been in this, game, in this line of work?
Going on 9 years now.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I've actually got no experience operationally in a restaurant whatsoever.
You look healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
If you look on the other side of the camera here, you can see who's been in the industry.
It's much easier being on the tech side of things. Let's put it that way. I've worked with various different kind of hospitality tech businesses during that time. But I've been with MarketMan about 5 years. And actually, I was involved with their arch rival, actually, prior to that.
You're going to say the name?
I'm not. They don't exist anymore, actually.
All right, okay, that's good then.
We sold the business to a point of sale company in the US, and then they assimilated the technology and closed everything down.
So they'll remain nameless.
Yeah, exactly.
A bit like Voldemort. Okay,
don't say it, yeah.
Don't say the name.
I've got a burning sensation here, yeah.
And what about the industry? Because obviously, I know you say you haven't worked in it, but I think suppliers are as important as the people within the industry, and you guys are touching the industry and obviously trying to solve problems for these guys. How do you see it change over your time, you know, your period of time working with all these customers? Have you seen much, you know, much change in the industry? I know the pandemic has obviously driven a lot of technological change, but do you think we're still on a long road? Because, you know, it's hard work. We're sitting in BrewDog here today. It's like a huge business. It's fantastic. But you still see they have issues sometimes with staffing, and they have issues, like normal stuff that everyone else deals with.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that still?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's still, the industry in the back of house has still got a long way to go, you know.
Yeah.
In some respects, quite rightly, businesses prioritize the front of house because, you know, without the ability to record the sale, can't do anything. But yeah, I think we touched on it earlier on. My argument is that actually, if you don't know what your cost of goods are, nothing else matters because you're not going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, you really need to have a handle on this. And we are slowly seeing, you know, people coming to back of house technologies for that because they're starting to realize actually spreadsheets just don't cut it.
Nah. Yeah. And I think you need to have a strong base. It's like, I'm trying to liken it to like a football team or something. You have to have a good goalie and a good striker, right? So one who saves goals and one scores them. And I think in restaurant terms, you need to have great control on your payroll and great control on your other costs, controllable costs, we used to call them.
Yeah.
And if you can do that well, then you have a chance, right?
Totally, yeah.
And it doesn't mean you have to be like stringent, battering people over the head every day about costs. It's just about sensible management.
Absolutely. And I think what, from my point of view now as well, with all of the labor shortage, et cetera, which is putting increased pressure onto businesses, I would argue that actually having a decent back of house system that can streamline processes and actually make people's jobs easier helps with that somewhat because you're able to ease the pressure on staff that are actually here and then retain the staff rather than having this continual cycle of looking for new staff and not getting them.
Yeah, and you know, I'm involved in, again, bore everyone, but with Atollo, where we work with mentoring, and we mentor people in the industry to retain them, to help support retention, and it is really challenging. And just getting people to engage in mentoring is hard. And then that's why I always talk about adoption of tech, that so many people invest so much time into spending money on buying tech, building tech, selling tech, and then the adoption is so frustrating because you're thinking, you've just spent all this time buying it, get it in, land it properly, and really see the results from it. Because, you know, I genuinely believe that most of these founders and clever people who built this stuff actually had a great plan, and it's doing well. And it's just, you've really got to see it through. So it must be challenging sometimes when you're selling in and you really want to see that adoption quite quickly. And so it can take time.
Yeah, definitely. I think what we've seen, a big change, again, certainly within the UK market, is that we've been working very closely with integrator partners.
Yeah.
You know, I would say we're probably integrated with most of the best-in-class systems here in the UK, whether it's point of sale or accounting or business intelligence. And we've almost built a community around like a tech stack ecosystem, and we work together a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I probably spend as much time talking to our partners as I do actually talking to customers.
It's a big part of the business, isn't it?
Yeah.
The partner business. I think when I first started doing this, I didn't really understand the partner side of it. I understood that you had people you would have to integrate with because that made sense. But I think the partner ecosystem, especially since COVID, has been much stronger. And I think the tech stack word is really becoming part of the language in the industry as well, because they're all understanding slowly that actually they need a start and a finish, and they need to have kit that works really well together. And as you say, best in class.
Yeah, and it's a way of being able to future-proof and it's scalable.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got somebody that's sticking in the lane with the point of sale and doing, you know, listening to their customers and improving that point of thing, and then back of house and then, you know, business intelligence.
Delivery, whatever,
Exactly. If they're all seamlessly integrated and working together, not only just from a technology point of view, but also from a partnership point of view, then it makes the whole implementation process so much easier for a business. Yeah.
I was talking to an ops director she's going into a new job next week in a burger chain. And they're quite new. They've got about 10 sites, and all the tech guys listening now going, ooh, who is it? And she was saying, I'm going to make it even worse now. She needs some tech, right? And she said, I need to go in and put some systems in because they don't have anything. They've grown really quickly. I need to help them. And I was like, yeah, give me a shout. I can help you. And she said, that's not me. I'm a great operator, but I just don't. I don't understand tech. As in, she gets it, what it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
But installing it, adopting it, all that, it's just not her bag. She wants to control people, manage people and look after people and make sure that, you know, the customer's looked after. All the good stuff that makes hospitality great. So I think there's a massive gap between where ops directors have landed, ended up having to manage, or because they didn't have it 4 years ago. And when I was an ops director, I didn't have all that stuff to manage. I had rotors, probably, and back of house, probably, with Forth or one of those guys. So I mentioned someone, sorry.
Got that burning sensation in the head again.
So I managed two systems, probably. And I probably didn't. We probably had a team in accounts who did it for us. But now they've got 6, 7 maybe, I would say. And what's really interesting is that individual, like single site, can have the benefit of multi-site, right?
Yeah.
So if I run my Chris's Cafe and I've got Market Man, I've got the same benefit as Wagamama.
Exactly.
Market Man.
Yeah, using the same systems.
Yeah.
Absolutely getting the same visibility. And I think that's really where Market Man started. You know, I mean, even now, I would say over 50% of our business is actually single site operators.
Really? Okay.
So yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for us because that's where it all began.
Yeah.
Certainly with single site operators, about giving them the systems, because the founders' friends had restaurants in Israel and they couldn't believe when they saw what was happening. So the founders were actually experienced mobile developers anyway. And then when they saw what their friends had to go through on a daily basis, they immediately saw...
That's a great story.
Like the benefits, what they could do to help their friends out, and then they put it into the friend's business. And then it's grown from there. So it's definitely a big focus for us. It's still helping single site operators.
And I think you see the results so quickly in a smaller company. I know you see results on site level, even in enterprise, quite quickly.
Yeah.
But as a group picture, it probably takes more time to collate it, look at it, understand what's happening. But in single site, it's so exciting to put tech in, I think, because if you can put a good tech stack in, as I said, you're automating all these things that the people shouldn't be doing anymore, humans, and you're making it so much quicker and slicker and efficient. And potentially just picking up pounds that were falling through the gaps.
Exactly. Like you said before, you're really putting them on a level playing ground with all the big guys, the enterprise guys that have got this tech, which makes them so successful and able to grow. You're giving the single site operators exactly the same advantages and visibility so that actually they've got a fighting chance of either growing or surviving and thriving in whatever their business model might be, whether it's to stay as a single site.
In the toughest time ever. I feel like I've been saying that for like 4 years.
I think it's true though. Yeah, I think it has been the toughest
this
4 years ever.
This is the worst day ever. Tomorrow will be the same again. But what about Market Man the future then? What's coming up?
Well, there's a certain amount I can say.
I feel like I need to sign an NDA.
Yeah, we've got a very exciting few years ahead.
Great.
And that's largely because, one, we're growing and expanding as Market Man anyway, but we merged with a company last year called Meal Ticket, and they are a suite of products for distributors.
Yep.
So there's an ambition and certainly a vision now to connect both systems and have an integrated solution all the way through from distributor through to operator. And actually that's got huge benefits for everybody.
Think about from the supply chain, because that's the one. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is there a really tech that does that?
No.
As in out there that does from the truck to the, literally from the farmer's field to the plate?
Yeah, no, not at the moment.
Wow.
And that was, I think the purchasing party was PSG Equity who funded the acquisition, and now the two companies are joined. We've been working together now for over 12 months, and it's a long road to go because
it's a big
one
problem,
amalgamating
right?
two existing successful businesses, and then also creating a new technology that right now doesn't really exist. It's a big job, but that it's super, super exciting that we're, you know, at some point in the future, we're going to be able to launch this tech that's going to help the hospitality industry even more than what you have done so far.
I think that that's the, and especially with the problems we're having, right? Especially with Brexit, to be able to see what the cost, I presume, might look like from start to finish.
Correct.
Is really interesting.
Yeah, and track kind of rebates, payments.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, blew my mind. That's great. And what about you? What's the plan for you? Are you you out in LATAM a lot, or are you mostly?
No, we not anymore.
oh dear.
Yeah.
yeah. It sucks to be you.
Yeah, I might have to make an excuse for that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, my focus is on the UK.
Right.
It's probably our fastest growing market outside of North America.
It is mature here, would you say? Like much more, I know you've got some experience over there. So do you think it's quite a mature market for
tech?
It is,
yeah. Yeah, it's getting better. You know, we've got some, and it's all around this partnership and tech ecosystem. You know, that's what really drives the UK forward. I wouldn't have necessarily said that the UK was quick to adopt new technology. I think we're always still a little bit more reserved, but we're Brits.
Yeah.
We're always going to be a bit more reserved.
If it ain't broke.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, my focus is heavily on the UK.
Yeah.
Latin America for us is almost a kind of a secondary, tertiary market, if you like, and we've got resellers and referral agents out in Latin America that bring us business. But the UK is absolutely booming right now, even though it's a challenging time. You know, you've still got operators opening new sites, although that seems to have slowed down, I would have said.
Yeah, I think we were just talking off air that this time of year, especially, I find that you kind of get in that little gap, the Easter gap, depending where it lands every year, so different.
Yeah.
It tends to lag, doesn't it? It's almost like a 6-week holiday for some reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really slows everything. I mean, same in our business in Atollo. It's just, you feel like you're kind of treading water for a little bit. So it's, but then things pick up.
And then
up,
you suddenly get a bit of it.
And then you hit the summer. Tick
again. Exactly. Nothing happens.
It's just the autumn, basically. Yeah. We're all busy in the autumn. But no, but it's great. And what? How can people get hold of you if they want to find out about MarketMan and find out some more information?
Yeah, so I mean, the web address is www.marketman.com.
Very good.
You can certainly email me directly, and I was about to say it's very easy, but it's just changed because we've moved from a MarketMan.
Yes, your meal ticket address. Emails.
Meal ticket now.
Yes,
yeah,
I noticed that. I saw that the other day.
So where it was david@marketman.com, which you can still email me on that.
I'll still
get it.
Yeah.
You can also email me on david.hume, which is hume@mealticket.com.
I bet a lot of David Humes with an L get your emails. Is that right?
Yeah.
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 The point that you made there, I was like, that's very clear.
Yeah, just think about the philosopher. That's how you spell it.
And then you're also on the marketplace, and this podcast will sit on the marketplace. So if you're on the marketplace, you're looking around, you find MarketMan, you'll find them there, and you can get in touch with them that way as well. So look, David, thank you very much. This
it's
is
been
a false
a pleasure.
Start. We had last week, we let him down because we had, ironically, some tech issues. But we're back online. The video will be out in a few weeks' time. So that's it. David, say bye-bye.
Thanks very much, everybody.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.